Danger Zone. This is Raylan Allen, and today, for this hour, I'm going to be interviewing Ed Corsi, who founded a group known as the Geauga Constitutional Council. And I'm going to be interviewing Melinda Pillsbury Foster, who most people here on the Micro Effect Radio Network know as a host. Ed Corsi comes from a large Italian family, which at one time was and still may be the largest family in Ohio. He's an entrepreneur, having been self-employed since the age of 23. His mother and father instilled in him a good work ethic, and his father always stressed for him to educate himself in whatever he did and strive to be the best in it. He said he had 2 years of college majoring in law enforcement with a strong inclination to become an FBI agent. He says he's glad he didn't pursue that line of work. After having a bad experience with a juvenile court judge in his county, he founded a group known as the Geauga Constitutional Council. They are an activist, watchdog, and informational group, and it's grown quite rapidly and gained respect and influence in his community. The reason that I am bringing the two together is Melinda Pillsbury Foster is a columnist at The Iconoclast. It's a paper with an international readership. She's the author of Greed, The Neoconning of America, from 2004. She's the founder of America Goes Home, a movement focused on reconnecting Americans with the roots of their freedom for the community and for commerce. She's also known as The Melinda on Rumor Mill News, and she's also a host here on the Micro Effect Radio Network. Welcome, Ed, and welcome, Melinda.
Hi, Ray. It's so nice of you to have us.
Well, I think that the conversation is going to be extremely lively. When I first met Melinda, I had just heard about Ed Corsi and what he is doing in Ohio, and I kept saying to her, you've got to get together with Ed, you've got to get together with Ed. And so finally yesterday, they got together, and I think they sort of planned what they were going to do on this radio show. But Ed, I thought I'd talk to you for a minute. How are you doing after this election?
Well, I'm very disappointed as to the outcome. In fact, I'm in shock that the American people would be so duped into voting for such a person. His name, if it were on a flight list, would be, he'd be a suspect for terrorism. I mean, I don't know. This is a first in history, and, I think a lot of people just don't know how to take it. They're in shock at this point. On both sides, I think they're in shock.
I think so, too. Some are in shock because they fully expected that McCain was going to win and they were going to go out and start a revolution. But, yeah. You know, we don't even know if he's going to be allowed to take the oath of office because we've got two cases, one in Hawaii and one going to the Supreme Court, that are challenging that he is even a native-born American. And God knows what kind of crisis that will create for the United States.
Yes, that's true. And I'm hoping that, you know how the legal system has a way of blocking these things and ignoring them or nullifying them. I'm just hoping that doesn't happen. And if this is true, if it is a fact, the discrepancy in his birth certificate that he is not an American citizen, I hope it's brought to light, and that not that I'm a big McCain supporter, because I think the country will go in the same direction no matter which one is elected.
I agree with that. I just thought we'd go a little faster with Barack Obama than we would with McCain.
I think so too.
Well, it sort of matters where you think you want to go sometimes.
Well, that's true.
And yeah. You actually could make the argument that the whole thing had been orchestrated, because one of the potential outcomes, if he is not qualified to be inaugurated, would be that they would have to call another election, which would keep Bush in office.
No, the Constitution, we had Dr. Edwin Vieira on, who's a constitutional scholar, and he explained to us the way that it's going to go. And if he is elected, if the Electoral College elects him, and then we find out he's not qualified, guess where it goes?
Yes, but this is going to happen. He has to produce the papers before October 1st. That already came out this morning. So that was before the Electoral College voted. The Electoral College would not be voting for him if he had been found to be unqualified.
But what Dr. Vieira said is if he is elected but has not yet been sworn in, when proof comes that he is not a citizen, then the person who would take the office is not Joe Biden. According to the Constitution, I think he said it was in Article 12, but I'd have to go back and research that. It is thrown into the House of Representatives. So in other words, the Democrats will get to choose the person they want to be president, and this person may never, ever have been vetted by any group of citizens except the people who elected him the first, him or her the first time.
But what you just laid out is not the circumstances that we're looking at, because if he's going to be found ineligible, it'll be before he's elected. He isn't elected yet. He isn't elected until the Electoral College meets and votes.
And when do they meet and vote?
December. I think it's around December 10th.
Okay. That the lawsuit in Hawaii is November 18th.
That doesn't matter. He has to produce it. Souter demanded that he produce it before December 1st.
Wait a minute. Melinda, you know something that I don't know.
Well, I'm sorry.
I know. Tell us what you just said.
He has to produce the information before December 1st. Souter came out with that this morning.
My God, and I was doing so many things putting together this radio show that I haven't even read the newspapers.
Well, I didn't read it in the newspaper. Somebody called me up and said, hey, guess what? And I said, what? They told me.
So Judge Souter, one of the liberal judges on the Supreme Court, has said that Barack Obama must produce proof that he is a native-born American citizen before December 1st.
That's right.
Well, here's another aspect of this is with the people, with the powers that are behind him, they can manufacture or do just about anything they want. How do we know that they're not going to manufacture a certificate for him?
Yeah, that's exactly what I told Dr. Vieira yesterday. I said the CIA can manufacture anything. They can come up with ink that's 40 years old. They can come up with news, with paper that's 40 years old. They can come up with identical signatures that the doctor signed 40 years ago.
But then the question that has to occur to you is, what do they want to prove? Now, like I said, they have set this up. If he wasn't elected, then I don't know that we're going to have anybody deciding. It looks like it could be, you know, a call for a new election, which would keep Bush in power.
I don't think that's correct. Ed, do you know anything about that? If for some reason the next president can't take power, I think there's something in the Constitution, at least I vaguely remember, that says it goes again to the House of Representatives and a caretaker government is formed.
Well, and who would be the caretaker government? But it would probably be Bush. And it's never happened. So, again, we're also asking probably what they were going to do is, ask the Supreme Court to make a decision. And that's a kind of scary thought.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
I'm unclear on this subject, so that's why I'm not confident.
We're talking about
really
the sort
sure.
of thing that it doesn't matter. There are lots of constitutional experts who said what happened in the year 2000 couldn't happen, too.
That's right.
The question is who's holding power and who can shove it down your throat.
Now, isn't that the truth? And one of the things that my CIA husband taught me is the way politics are played worldwide is the person who has the gun at your head at that particular moment is the one who is making the decisions at that particular moment. And
yes.
Most of our politicians, you know, I think most of our readers know they're bopped, they're bribed, and if they are so high of moral conscience that they can't be bought or bribed, then they're threatened. And if they don't give in to threats, one of their animals is killed, one of their children is killed, their wife is killed. I mean, these guys play with everything that is available to them.
They're very serious and dangerous people, and they have a definite agenda, which most Americans are not even aware of. They're, you know, in this election, the voting, for the most part, was all emotional, and, you know, the chanting, it was almost like a cult effect. What were the words Obama used? We can do it, or we did do it, or, you know, they chanted that at his...
Yes, we can.
You know,
yes, we can.
Yes, we can. Yes, we did. Yes, we can. Yes, we did. That's
mm-hmm.
And it's almost like a cult following.
It's hypnotic.
You know, chanting. It is.
Yeah. That's
yeah.
one of the reasons you do that. It's one of the advantages of ritual.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that was why
people
I tried
to have thought into acceptance, you know, right into acceptance. It's a face. It's actually used ritually to hammer in things that you couldn't get people to accept if they actually thought about it.
Right.
It's sort of a form of interesting, very old mind control.
Yeah, I noticed that this is what was going on, and people were voting emotionally. You know, how many people out there thought about this guy in the context of, is he going to protect our constitutional rights? How serious is he about our Constitution? Well, we know the answer. He and his wife are both contemptful of the United States and the Constitution, and many of their comments have shown that their pastor, who they've been with for over 20 years, and then claim to have no knowledge of what he preaches. They must have been asleep in church. Their pastor is a radical against the United States and against whites. He's a racist and made racist comments and anti-American comments. And so I think, you know, there's a lot of information that has come out about this man in various publications all across the Internet, across the country. And yet people have ignored all of this. In fact, I'm not just talking about the black community. I'm talking about the white community, especially. They've ignored all of this and just voted emotionally. And they think this man is going to be able to put money in their pocket and create jobs. And that just isn't going to happen because he doesn't have the ability to do that.
I have seen two videos where one woman is just crying because she says, Barack's going to take care of me. He's going to pay for my house. He's going to give me money for food for my kids. And the other one essentially said the same thing. Barack is going to keep me from being thrown out of my house. I just cannot believe it. And that glazed over look that you see in the eyes of Moonies,
you know,
and the Rajneeshis.
When you're talking about people who have no hope, and a lot of people in America today have no hope. They don't see anything. They're grasping at straws. They're looking for something that's different, that looks different than what they've had, because they're hoping that will be better. And
okay,
given how completely irrational American politics is and the complete disconnect between political rhetoric and reality, I don't fault them, because it's up to us to force politicians to be their word and not accept this continual lathering of asinine rhetoric that has no relationship with what they then deliver. I mean, how many times did George Bush talk about freedom, independence, America, our rights, making sure that legislation was passed that destroyed every right that we have?
That's right. They never really stick to their campaign promises. And now, wait, I need to clarify something, Melinda. Did you say that you can't blame politicians?
I don't blame. I don't know. I blame politicians. I don't blame people like this woman who's afraid of being thrown out of her house. She feels completely powerless.
Well, see, in that respect, I'm going to have to disagree to some extent, because I do blame people. In fact, it's the people that scare me more than the politicians, because they're the ones that are ignorant and have become so ignorant and so easily fooled because of their ignorance, and because, you know, there's many reasons. This country has become very ignorant, very dumbed down, and here's the main factor. There's a difference between stupid and ignorant. We're all ignorant because none of us know everything, but we're not all stupid. And stupidity, to me, is just a lack of being able to think for yourself or even to want to. If you aren't seeking the truth, you will never find it. And most people are not seeking the truth. And to me, that's stupid, because if you seek the truth, you will always find it.
I don't know about that. How many of us actually have believed? How many of us actually believed, read my lips, no new taxes? How many of us believe Ronald Reagan when he said, you know, he was actually pro-free market and he wasn't?
I don't believe any of them until I see them produce.
Because they didn't produce. And, you know, it's sad because, I love Ronnie. You know, he knew my dad. There's lots of family stories that involve him personally. After I looked at what he had done to America, I didn't have any doubt about what his presidency had actually meant to us.
Well, Ronald Reagan was never president. George Herbert Walker Bush was president from the minute Ronald Reagan was assassinated. Nancy and Ronnie went in truly thinking that they were going to be president and first lady. And there was the assassination attempt, and on the way to the hospital, the 15 minutes that it took to take a three-minute trip to the hospital, Nancy was called into the Oval Office where General Haig was sitting in there holding the government together, and he and George Bush, who was on the phone, essentially said to her, "You've got a choice. We can let him die, or you can be his handler. You can be first lady. He can be president. You can get all of that, but the power goes to us."
There's really, you know, Ray, I understand what you're saying, but there's something that you have to read. And I put it up on a side. There were only two copies left. This was actually written, and it was a passed by the United Republicans of California. Okay, United Republicans of California in 1975. And what it is, it's a resolution begging Americans not to vote for Ronald Reagan for president or vice president. And it's three pages of eight-point type explaining why he was never a conservative and what he did to the conservative movement.
Okay, well, I'm not defending him. I mean, I absolutely do agree.
No, but I wanted people to read this. So let me give you the website, and you can go take a look at it for yourself. It's UROC Resolution 1975.blogspot.com.
If you can Skype that to me when you've got time, I'll put it up on Rumor Mill News. So all of those without pens right at this moment, including myself, can take a look at it. We'll put it up on Rumor Mill News so all of our listeners can see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ronnie used to send my daughter Morgan little checks because he would call on the phone to talk to my dad, and Morgan wouldn't let him talk to my dad unless he said he would send her money.
Oh, my
God. Probably not the best example and the thing to let her get away with, but, yeah, wonderful guy.
That is funny. That is a funny story.
Let's just get back to the people for a minute because I'd just like to say, let's say I was in financial trouble and years ago, I have been. I think a lot of us have faced that at one time in our life or another. And I'm going back over 20 years, and I don't care what financial state a person is in. You still have to use common sense and have the ability to. I think people need to learn to, instead of blindly accepting all this glorified rhetoric and you know the old saying, if it sounds too good to be true, it usually is. Well, people, instead of blindly trying to grasp onto something because they have no hope, because a lot of them are doing nothing in their lives. They're waiting for somebody to do it for them, and
that's correct.
And that is the wrong attitude. You, for instance, if I were in that position, I would not just jump at the first thing an Obama would say to me. I would start thinking to myself, well, what's this guy all about, and how is he going to implement these things, and where is he going to get the money for it, and is he really on the up and up? How can he implement this? This sounds like a bunch of baloney to me. And you know, I would ask myself all these questions, and people don't do that. They've just been so dumbed down. And actually, the population scares me more than the politicians who try to pull this kind of stuff, because the public are the ones who vote for them and get them in, and they're not using their head or any common sense or intelligence. And I rely, and let me clarify that, I rely more on common sense than intelligence, because you don't even have to know all the issues or be a historical scholar to use common sense and to know who's lying to you and who's not, or who's trying to pull the wool over your eyes. There are little telltale signals that you can always pick up just using common sense, and I think people have just lost their common sense today. I think the people are scarier in this country than the politicians, because they're so easily manipulated, And these people know exactly what, how to pull the strings and how to get the people to shift their line of thought to whatever direction they want them to shift it to.
You know, you have to, you know, granted, I'm not saying that people aren't responsible for what they do, but if you take a look at how this has been brought about and the kind of role that public schooling, the media play in what people think, what they believe because they don't have any other evidence, how in every level of their lives, the power to do it themselves has been slowly eroded and taken away from them. Let me tell you a story. I grew up in West Los Angeles, and my mother was very ill at one point when I was about 9 or 10 years old. We had so we had to have somebody come in and clean the house. And the woman that they picked, she must have been in her 70s at the time, and her name was Maxine. And she was the blackest person I have ever seen. And she always drove up to the house in a new Cadillac, and she always had a wig. And she always had a fur coat. Even in the summertime, she wore a fur coat. She'd take it off. She cleaned the house. And she was fascinating. She told me, I found out things from her I'd never heard from anybody else in my entire life. She told me that her pappy was born in a slave times in Texas. And she'd gotten married when she was 13. She'd been raised on a sharecropper farm. And she and her husband owned 6 apartment buildings. She couldn't bite it, but it wouldn't work. And, you know, time went on. She came back. You know, we kept in touch. We used to go to the events at their house. They came to our house. And she came back once, and she was just in tears. She wasn't being treated with respect by her own children and grandchildren because she had quit school when she was 12 years old. It didn't matter that she and her husband were millionaires. It didn't matter they were successful. They were dissed. She had social workers coming to the house at this point. Now, we're talking about the 50s and 60s, telling her why her kids, grandkids needed to go on welfare. She wanted her kids and grandkids to go to college. They were looking to put people in a dependency relationship, and they were doing it because even at that point, they were taking a look at government, which is their business, as something they wanted to be a growth industry. Mm-hmm. And therefore, they were trying to drum up clients.
Well, Melinda, you grew up in L.A., and you probably are familiar when L.A. wanted the downtown area where all of their high-rise hotels are right now. That area used to be almost an independent city. That was where the black people lived. They had their police department, their insurance companies, their banks, their fire department, and
at every level, what do they try to do? They want to destroy people's community independence.
And that's exactly
right.
What they did. They moved them all out to Watts. I mean, we are responsible. I mean, I can understand the black anger.
Oh, I can too. Absolutely.
Listen, that's like saying that the credit card companies are responsible for the people being in debt. And I say no. I say, yes, the credit card companies do entice you. They send these credit cards in the mail. You don't have to qualify. You don't, they send them to college kids that don't even have jobs. I mean, they're horrible. But we are the ones that make choices for our lives. And those choices affect the direction our lives go in. And we make a choice to accept that credit card and just spend all kinds of money we don't have. Actually, it's not money, it's credit. And we make those choices. Now, we can choose to see the deceit in the issuing of these credit cards and the credit card companies themselves. We can choose to observe that and say, well, look, I don't have the money to pay for this. I'm not going to use this. This is a bad idea. I don't know why they're sending it to me, but I'm not accepting it. We have choices, and the people aren't making those choices. It's comparable to a man who has a mistress. He pays for her apartment, pays for her clothing, pays for her makeup, everything, takes her out to dinner. She's got everything she wants from this guy. But it comes with strings attached, and he's got rules, and she has to follow them. And if she doesn't, she's no longer his mistress. He cuts her off, throws her out of the apartment. She gets none of that. It's kind of like welfare. I mean, I don't know if this is a great example, but it's one
well,
that came to my mind.
Yeah, it is an example, and let's go back to what Melinda was saying about her 70-year-old maid, who was a multimillionaire, who still continued working, but at this time in the United States, our government was trying to force people onto welfare. And
they still had a choice.
You know, it's all well and good to say people still had a choice, but the fact is there's a principle in law. You have to have equity between the two people who are making the decision.
And I've got to go to work at the company store to pay for all of this, so if you guys will hold on to that thought, we'll be back after I put in my time.
Don't need a vote. Won't need a union.
On the radio, and I've got Melinda Pillsbury Foster and Ed Corsi as my guests, and both of them are involved in activities at a county level. Melinda is involved trying to pull all the different people who are doing similar things to Ed, literally bringing the power back to the grassroots of the community. And so Ed has created the Geauga Constitutional, I can't remember the name of it, Ed. What is it?
The Geauga Constitutional Council.
And when I first saw his webpage, I realized that the idea that he's created in Geauga County, Ohio, could literally be picked up and recreated all across the country. And Melinda, let's start with you. Let's find out all the different people that you have already networked with to bring together, and people who are already doing things that take the power back to the grassroots level.
Well, there's a lot of people. I mean, I don't know if we'd have time for that. One of the people that we're working with on a county level, and he's Sheriff Richard Mack. Sheriff
yes.
Mack is the first sheriff that filed against the Brady Bill. And he did that. He wasn't in consultation with the NRA or anybody like that. He simply realized that they had gone too far, that they didn't have a right to tell the county sheriff that he had to enforce federal statutes. So he filed against it. And he knew he was putting his career on the line. And, of course, that action resulted in the overthrow of the Brady Bill in 98. And people think, yes, it's about guns. No, it's about the Constitution and the fact that the sheriff is the top law enforcement in any county. So one of the people we're working with is Richard. He has a new book out, The County Sheriff, America's Last Hope. Because if you have the sheriff on board, understanding that he must uphold the Constitution, then it's actually very possible to clean up the entire county, because using the sheriff and a common law court properly constituted, you can take corrupt judges, corrupt commissioners, other officials out of office, and then replace them. So that's one of the components. On the other side, one of the other things that we're doing is, there's very little point in controlling any of these things if you aren't being able to feed yourself. And counties are now looking at a total and complete financial meltdown on several different levels. So one of the things we need to do is what we call localized commerce, so that people are creating new jobs in new arenas that are keeping the loop of the money local. One of the things that we're putting together is a mass buying club, so that people are going to be able to get the lowest possible price on solar, because, of course, what that does is get you off one of the grids completely and permanently, and that's important. We're working on a plan for Wi-Fi so that people can pay less for that, again, getting off the grid and starting a local income stream. Save everybody money, start a local income stream. Those are two of our sort of mantras. And then showing people how they can grow local, how they can cooperate with others within their community. One, to lower the cost of their food, ensure that it's there, but just as important, make sure that the food that they're getting actually is nourishing their bodies. Because when that happens, people's health returns, which goes into another one of the things that's been turned into a grid, another reference back to 1913 when the AMA was given a lock on the provision of medicine and medical care in America. So those are some of the things that we're doing. Another thing that we're doing is we have a cooperative relationship with a guy, you probably saw his video, Jerry Day. And Jerry is a documentary maker from Hollywood, and he's going to be producing a series of films for Richard Mack that'll be very professional, that will give you the seminar, what needs to be said, what your local law enforcement and local citizens need to know about the Constitution. And we know we're really looking forward to seeing that happening. The first one will hopefully be out within the next 2 months. Really great guy. But if you remember the video he did for Ron Paul, he wasn't actually for Ron Paul. He just decided, just like most Ron Paul people, he was going to go do it himself. And what that did is it was the video that told you, asked the question, why isn't he getting the coverage he deserves? And I think they had about 200,000 viewings of that video. So those are a few of the things that America Goes Home is doing. What we are is we are an informational network. We're a center. We put people together. We help them find the resources they need to be able to enact those changes in their own local counties.
And what is that website that you've got?
AmericaGoesHome.com. .org.
Excuse me, AmericaGoesHome.org?
.org. It's really, it may seem a little bit strange, but we've organized ourselves as a spiritual community. Because for everybody involved, this is a spiritual issue. People have a relationship they need to have with each other. When you really get into it, it's a spiritual relationship. The way that we treat each other, being in community with one another, instead, and so that both sides are better off from every exchange, that's the way that we're meant to be.
One of the things that when Melinda and I were talking about this, here in my county, if I started something like Ed has started in Geauga County, I wouldn't be able to get the liberals in my county to want to be involved in it.
Sure you would.
How do I do that?
Well, it's really funny you'd say that, because one of the people involved with what I'm doing is a liberal in your county.
Incredible. Who's that?
Her name's Gail Work.
Okay, I don't know her.
Well, of course, and you probably don't. But she and I have had many conversations about this. She's all about taking the power back to the people, giving people back control of their own lives, and she comes at it using a particular set of tools, but, you know, the use of those tools takes you to the same place, which is the people doing it themselves, using consensus and persuasion, and not force, because the thing you have to remember about government is it's force.
Well, I agree. Here in my area, we've got a lot of government people that have literally been trained in these New World Order techniques to disempower their opponents. And they know how to, you know, if you go to a city council meeting and you try to bring up anything, they use the Delphi technique on you and make you look ridiculous. And then, you know, you get 2 minutes to speak, but they're using the Delphi technique on you for those entire 2 minutes. And so nobody gets to say anything. And they've completely made a fool of you. And everybody thinks that the brilliant point that you were trying to make was ridiculous.
Well, you never speak to their point, only speak to your own point.
Well, it doesn't matter. No, it doesn't matter what you're trying to introduce. What I'm saying is most elected officials are trained in this technique. It's called the Delphi technique. And I'll go into my archives and find it and put it back out on Rumor Mill News. But In our area, my gosh, I've been active. I have to admit, I was even on the local Republican Central Committee for a few years because we were trying to stop this New World Order steamrolling. My county was the county that was the test county for Agenda 21. And we found out that if you even mention the word Constitution, you are the enemy. And I don't know how to get beyond that.
Well, you know, they, in 1999, they wrote the Anti-Government Movement Handbook.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that you do it, and, you know, this is one of the things that I think is very important for people to remember. Never take the defensive. Always be on the offensive. George S. Patton Jr. said this, and it's very true. If you're on the defensive, you're going to lose. And
Right. Well,
that needs to be crammed down their throat. They used our money to write a book to tell people how to deal with us. And the thing that you need to remember about law enforcement and about everything that they're doing is that it is completely unconstitutional. They use the word that way. One of the techniques that we've been talking about and that we're encouraging people to use is to notice law enforcement. So there's law enforcement. You get a group of people to sign a petition. We really want you to read the Constitution because you're really obligated. Here's the thing. You're obligated to follow it. Doesn't really matter what the people who are, you know, you're taking your orders from say. What really matters is what this says because this is the law of the land. And you give them a copy of the Constitution. You give them a copy of Richard's book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, or his new book about the sheriff and his duties. And at the same time, you say, and, you know, we challenge you. We're going to be having a test. The person who gets the highest grade on this test, and it's for eighth graders, is going to get $500.
Oh, my gosh.
So they get noticed.
What an incredible idea.
They get noticed, and they go, well, what could it be? Well, it's an eighth grade test on the Constitution from 1920s.
Oh, my gosh.
And this test has actually been used by, there's a DA, he's a good guy, and he's in Illinois. And he's never had a politician pass the test.
That I can believe.
Yes. And what you need to do is challenge them and understand that. And they also need to understand that beyond that, they have consistently tried to pick people to go into law enforcement whose IQs are under 100. They want people who are stupid so they'll simply follow the rules. And they want them to be vulnerable because they know perfectly well that these people are being sent into harm's way in some very significant ways. If they violate the Constitution, they are not going to be there to back them up when a push comes to shove. If it really comes to a meltdown in terms of what they've tried to do, they know those people are going to be out there. They're going to be charged, and there are going to be a lot of angry Americans. And I think that I wrote an article about this last year, and it was called America's Nuremberg. And they need to remember they will be held accountable. Maybe not today, but the American people are slow to anger, but anger will come if they push it.
I absolutely agree. Well, Ed, you've heard all of the different things that Melinda is, or some of the different things that Melinda is involved in. Now, can you tell us a little bit about the Geauga Constitutional Council? What was your impetus to start it, and what has happened since you have started it?
Well, the impetus was, you know, it was never really a thought on my mind because this does take up my work schedule is busy, but this takes up even more time, and it just was never a thought on my mind. But what spurred it was my son when he was 16, which was a couple of years ago, was involved in an incident where he really did nothing. One of the other boys who was with was drinking, but my son doesn't drink, and they forced all these boys, there was about 10 or 15 of them, they were at a concert. There was a local venue that has local bands play, and the kids like to go there and hear their favorite bands. And of course, there's very few places for the kids to go to today. And the police in this particular township didn't like this place, and there were two in particular that would harass the kids all the time and make comments and just, you know, harass them. And the kids hate them. And instead of making friends with the kids, they made enemies. And So anyway, they forced breathalyzers on all these kids. My son was not drinking, but his breathalyzer came out to 0.02, which is a margin of error that they use. 0.02 is the margin of error. And I give him liquid herbs three times a day that have anywhere from a 35 to 45% alcohol content. And even Listerine mouthwash can give you a 0.02. I mean, and at the time, you know, he was kind of skinny, which adds to the inaccuracy of the breathalyzer. But they were forced to take them. It was unconstitutional the way they were administered because they forced the kids to. They intimidated them into taking them. And there was he was arrested along with this other kid, and there was never an arrest warrant or an affidavit in support of an arrest warrant as the Fourth Amendment requires. Now, the Fourth Amendment, there is no age limit on the Fourth Amendment. It is for everyone of all ages. And I figured, well, I have a little background in law, so I wrote a notice to the judge thinking that, well, this man's intelligent. He's an attorney. He'll understand what I'm saying and throw the case out. So I noticed him that, you know, the warrant and the affidavit were missing. Well, this angered him, and he became very abusive and aggressive against us. Instead of commending my son, you know, because most kids, you know, don't go out of their way to learn any of the Constitution, or it's not taught in the schools, he should have commended my son and said, good job. But instead, he got real mad at both of us, and he threatened to put me in jail if I said anything more about it in court. Well, according to juvenile rules of the court, I'm a party to the case, and I have every right to talk and to respond. And anyway, the whole thing was just was horrible, and he blatantly, we noticed him five different times, he blatantly ignored that and supported the police in their illegal, unconstitutional action. And, you know, the courts are supposed to be neutral and correct things like this when they see them happening and help educate the policemen to these matters. And that's just not what was happening here. So I was so frustrated and angry, I thought to myself, how do idiots like this keep getting elected over and over again? Well, one reason is a lot of them aren't exposed. And so I thought to myself, I'm going to start a group and get this guy out of office.
Well, yay, congratulations. Good thing.
Well, it turned into more than that. It became much bigger than just getting this guy out of office. And it grew very rapidly. And we were one of the major influences in Ohio in this the Great Lakes Water Compact. Which is another United Nations Agenda 21 issue, where they want to control all the waters in the world.
I'm going to be doing a show on Agenda 21 soon.
Yeah, well, we were one of the major exposers in Ohio of this Great Lakes Water Compact, and we held public forums with one of our state senators who was a constitutionalist, and our forums are very successful, very well attended. At this one forum, we filled the whole lunchroom of West Geauga High School. I think there were about between 250 and 300 people there. Channel 3 News was there, reporters from all the papers. And so our forums, people, you know, our forums are popular, and we pick subjects that are of interest to people and important to people at the time. And they're well attended, and we've been, you know, you can't fight every issue. There's too many fronts and too many battles, and you just can't do them all. So what we did was we would have meetings, and we would select the particular battles or issues that we would be addressing, and they would have to be major ones that would severely impact people. And the trivial ones we just let go because they weren't as important. And, of course, we didn't have the time to address everything, so we selected our issues carefully, and that's an important thing. You have to select your issues carefully and then approach them carefully. If we had to watch, we're a big letter writing group. We write letters all the time to all the local newspapers, letters to the editor, getting truthful information out to people, challenging things that are not right. And we have public forums that we hold. We have a website that that people go to get information. We have an email list that we blast information out to people on. So we use all these methods of communication to get the truth out. And the truth is very powerful. You have to watch how you deliver it. We didn't want to look like wackos because then we would lose credibility. So we did it in a tasteful manner and an educated manner. We made sure that what we were saying was accurate because you don't want to start saying things that are not accurate and you'll lose credibility right away. And we didn't want to come across, we didn't want to start making outlandish accusations or statements or sounding like wackos because then you lose credibility that way also. So it has to be done in the correct manner if you want credibility and you want people to listen to you. And so we have done that, and we've had great success. And another thing we do is we support politicians for office or elected servants, I like to call them because they are servants. We support the ones that are strong constitutionalists and conservative and believe in the standards that our forefathers established in this country through the Constitution. And we support these people in their elections, and everyone locally that we've helped so far has won. And how we support them is through our website, through our email blasts, letters to the editors in the paper. And we've been very successful. In fact, a lot of them now come to us asking us for support. Of course, we won't support the ones that are liberal, and those people know not to come to us because their agenda is totally different from ours, and they know that and recognize it, and so they wouldn't bother asking us because they
well, you know, I know one of your best friends is a liberal. Dennis.
Well, he's not my best friend.
But I know your friend. But he's a liberal that believes in the Constitution, isn't that correct?
And because of that, we support him.
Mm-hmm.
But now, when you say liberal, okay, Dennis is considered a liberal, but we don't have any political designation. We are independent. We will support a Democrat, a Republican, a constitutionalist, a libertarian. We don't care who you are, as long as you're conservative, you have good family values, you support the Constitution and the values of our founding fathers and what they gave us in this country, and those are the kind of people we support. We don't care what party they claim to. We don't care if they're from Mars. We will support them if they have those ingredients. And Dennis, the fact that he is fighting, he's one of the few handful of people in Congress that is fighting for our Constitution, and so we support him.
We should tell our audience we're talking about Representative Dennis Kucinich, who is Ed's congressman.
How fortunate for you.
I know. He's one of the few Democrats that I support also.
Yeah.
Well, he's one of the few Republicans, too.
Getting
back to what Melinda was saying about what the conversation you two were having about how do you get a liberal to join you. Well, some of these people you think are liberal may be only halfway liberal. Some of their views might be conservative mixed with some liberal views. And those, you'd be surprised sometimes at what kind of people may join your cause or your effort that you wouldn't necessarily think might do that.
Well, Ed, how did you start it? What did you do? Did you run an ad in the paper, or did you just talk to friends, or how did it begin?
Well, I have friends who are very like-minded and concerned about the same issues in our country and the deterioration of our Constitution, and I started it with them, and then it just grew from there. We just got together, and we started out with, we have a core group, a small core group, and in that core, we had about 15 to 20 people that would meet every 2 weeks to discuss what we would be addressing and how we were going to approach it and who would do what. And we had to cut that down because whenever you start a group like this, and I don't care what group it is, you're going to have trouble with some people. And we were no exception. We had trouble with some people, actually some Ron Paul supporters who, and I do support Ron Paul, but we had trouble with some of his supporters. They had their own little agenda going, and they wanted to, and it was kind of like a group within a group, like we have a country within a country in this country. And these people, when you get people like that, if you start a group and you get people like that in your group, they will destroy your group. They will cause dissension, arguments, and they will split the group up. So you have to get rid of them right away.
And, you know, sadly, we've got so many people who are paid agents of the New World Order that their entire purpose is to do exactly that, you know, to go into groups, to cause dissension, to destroy the group.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
We paid well for doing it.
So. Absolutely. We saw it in our local Republican committee. There aren't any Republicans left anymore. There's only New World Order people here in this area.
Well, you know, Geauga County is a predominantly Republican county, but we're educating people now slowly because, you know, after being Republican, being part of a party all your life, it takes, or for most of your life, you know, it takes quite a while to readjust the thinking and reacclimate yourself. So we've been educating people in this county to not vote for party, but look at the person, because both parties have let us down. Both parties, if you pardon the expression, are screwing us, and they're both disintegrating our constitutional rights. They're both guilty of that. So as a matter of fact, the distinction between the two parties that existed years and years ago has slowly but surely eroded,
you know,
to the point where
I can't believe how fast
difference.
I can't believe how fast this half hour has gone. I've got to go back to work here at this company store for a bit. But on the other side of the commercials, we're going to come back right to where we are with Ed Corsi and Melinda Pillsbury Foster.